Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and Friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is Tucson City Councilman and former Vice Mayor Paul Cunningham, discussing his Jewish roots and life and overcoming his personal challenge with addiction. We'll also have a visit from our Two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our Mavina on Israel, Oshrat Borel. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. You know, I've been thinking about the role of public service in our society and the place of Jews in American government in particular. We Jews have contributed to America in many ways from the very beginning of the country. That's particularly true in the area of public service, in which Jews have held a variety of elected and appointed offices virtually since the start of America. The first elected member of a colonial legislature was a man named Francis Salvador, a South Carolinian of Sephardic descent, who was elected in 1775. He later became the first Jew killed fighting for the young United States during the Revolutionary War in 1776. He began a series of Jews who have held nearly every American office, save that of president and vice president. We have run for those, but not yet been elected. But at every other level of American political service, Jews have played a very important role. It is one of the truly great aspects of America that religion is no boundary to public office. And in fact, religious diversity helps inform and enrich the civic dialogue with deep spiritual values that come from our variegated populace. That great diversity is a strength of our nation. You don't have to drop your own moral values when you enter the public sphere, and we've had Orthodox, Conservative, and Reform Jews elected and appointed to all the major positions in our society, almost. The current White House Chief of Staff, Jack Lew, is an Orthodox Jew. The head of the Fed, Janet Yellen, is Reform. And the three Jews who sit on the U.S. Supreme Court, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Stephen Breyer, and Elena Kagan, are respectively semi-reform, secular, and conservative Jews of varying degrees of practice, observance, and background. There are many Jewish senators, congressmen, and congresswomen, as well as a variety of Jewish governors, state senators, and representatives, and there are mayors, including those in both Phoenix and Tucson, and council members everywhere in America. Frankly, the Jewish presence in so many sectors of our public life is remarkable, considering we form just about 2% of the total population of America. One of the reasons for this overrepresentation is that Jews have the freedom in our country to seek public office. The opportunity exists here as it rarely has in our people's long history. Another reason is the depth of commitment in Jewish religious tradition to working to improve the world, to dedicating energy, effort, and resources, seeking to create a better, healthier, more just world for everyone, and beginning to do it at home, in our own city, state, county, and country. Judaism teaches us again and again that we are all responsible to one another, Kol Yisrael Arevim Ze Bazeh, and each of us has a moral responsibility to assist others. If we can improve the whole society, well, we have to make a commitment and do so. All of that goes into creating an environment in which public service becomes an important part of Jewish identity in America and drives many of our best people to seek office and to demonstrate a dedication to working to improve society. In a way, this represents the mutual commitment of our country to providing freedom of opportunity and truly representative government, and for the Jewish citizens of our nation to provide dedicated service in fulfillment of our historic and religious commitments to do so. So, to play us in this morning on the theme of dedication and commitment, here's a little Passover medley for the coming holiday. It's from my dad, Rabbi and Cantor Baruch Kohan, and myself, Bechol Dor Vador. In every generation, each of us is obligated to see ourselves as though we had personally come out of Egypt, combined with Shalach Ami, let my people go.
Bechol Dor Vador.
That was a Passover medley from Baruch and, well, Samuel Cohen. Bechol Dor Vador, in every generation, and Shalach Ami, let my people go. It's springtime officially now, the season of hope and of accentuating the positive, the time for new beginnings and fresh starts. It's also the time for spring cleaning, and the upcoming festival of Passover is the perfect time to do that. In fact, one of the four names of Pesach is Chag Ha'aviv, the holiday of the spring. Here in Tucson, Arizona, where I live, the trees are turning green, the flowers are blooming, and the air is lovely, fresh, and warm most of the time. It's a good time to be alive. Undoubtedly, there was a spring festival observed long before the events of the Exodus led to the creation of this holiday of Passover. Spring is, frankly, celebrated in every culture and nearly every religion, too. In our Seder celebrations, the orderly meal we hold the first two nights of Pesach that teaches the meaning and story of freedom in a rich and wonderful variety of ways, spring is featured in the green vegetables we dip in salt water and in the hard-boiled egg that symbolizes the rebirth of spring. The magnificent love poem Shir HaShirim, the Song of Songs, is chanted on Passover, filled with images of gardens, growth, and love in the flowering springtime. It's a wonderful way to celebrate this most beautiful and verdant of seasons. Until, of course, we realize that we have to clean, cook, and basically work ourselves to the bone preparing for the ultimate festival of freedom. If you are hosting a sizable Seder the first night of Passover, you know that you are purchasing Pesach food supplies, cleaning, removing all the leavened material from your home, preparing all the delicious and hard-to-make foods for the complex meal without many of your regular leavened food products, plus preparing all the ritual foods as well, and generally working a second full-time job as a kitchen and cleaning slave preparing for the holiday of liberation. It's as though we work like our ancestors did in Egyptian slavery just so we can fully appreciate the joy of freedom. Still, it's a beautiful time of year, and more people celebrate Pesach than just about any Jewish holiday or ritual the whole rest of the year. And so to play us in this morning, here's a little more of our pre-Passover preview of Pesach music from the Three Jewish Tenors, a tribute to the great old-time cantor Moshe Oysher, a mini-medley of tunes from the Passover Seder, Ki Lo Na'eh and Chad Gadya, two Hasidic versions of these classic Pesach Seder songs. That was the three Jewish tenors, Abe Mizrahi, Meir Finkelstein, and David Propus, singing a mini medley of Moshe Oysher melodies for the Passover Seder. That would be some Seder with those guys. Paul Cunningham is a Jewish Tucson city councilman and past vice mayor who has a remarkable personal story to share about identity, challenge, and redemption. Meet him when we come back soon here on Too Jewish.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through eighth grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, thaaz.org, 529-3888.
If you like fun and games, you'll love this. And this. And even this. Casino del Sol Resort offers more fun under the sun with the newest slots, the best entertainment, and world-class golf. If you want fun, hit the at Casino del Sol Resort in Tucson. Take I-10 East to I-19 exit Valencia West or visit CasinoDelSolResort.com. Well, they're out there having fun in that warm Arizona sun. Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
We are delighted to welcome the Too Jewish our guests this morning. Paul Cunningham is vice mayor of Tucson, a city councilman, a native Tucsonan, a longtime community activist with close to 20 years of professional and volunteer public service. He also has what we call in Yiddish yichus. His dad is state senator, former state senator George Cunningham, and his mom, Margie Cunningham, a lifelong activist in Tucson. Paul, good morning. Welcome to Too Jewish.
Thanks for having me, Rabbi.
All right, so tell us what your Jewish background, what aspect of your Jewish background have led you to your commitment to public service?
Well, I grew up here in Tucson, and my grandmother was on the bench. She was one of the first few women on the bench in Arizona, I think one of the first Jewish women for sure. And she was on the bench starting in 1974. And my mother...
So one of the first women judges in Arizona history.
One of the first. I think there's a couple before her, but she was definitely in the first five or so. And then she was, I'm sure, the first Jewish woman judge. And that's exciting to know. But she was drawn to public service right away. And my father also served. So my mother and father were married in 1969, and they both made a commitment that their children would be Jewish. So I grew up in a Jewish home. I mean, we did Hanukkah every year. We never had a Christmas tree. My father was Gentile, and we'd go to my relatives for Christmas and for
Easter too.
Not Easter, just Christmas and mainly Christmas, and the secular holidays. But we had a big break fast every year, and then we had a big St. Patrick's Day party every year in my parents' house. I go figure. So those were the two things, and you could say that by some perspective, I was Jewish and Irish Catholic at the same time, but that's a little too much guilt for one person, so I mainly stuck to the Judaism.
And you were raised essentially in a conservative congregation, bar mitzvah.
Rabbi Alesky was my rabbi, like a lot of folks here in Tucson. For my generation, for the guys my age, we look at Rabbi Alesky as a mentor, as guidance, as someone who was our rock. Whereas my parents' generation probably look at him as a colleague, as someone who helped them build something special over there. So it's about perspective, and for us, he was our rabbi.
Coming out of that background, was there something about Judaism that moved you towards public service as opposed to doing something else with your career?
Well, Judaism, at the end of the day, Judaism has a serious mantra about the community. Is the community's success is translated to personal success, or the community's first.
And each of us has a responsibility to every other.
Judaism has that. That's an underlying theme in half and almost everything we talk about. The community, love thy neighbors. I mean, everything is there. I think the stationery at Anchai had the love thy neighbor quote for like 30 years.
Right.
So when you're talking about community and you're talking about, you know, public service, all you're doing is you're trying to make your community the best it can be. You want it to meet its potential. You want it to be successful, and you want it to be something that's great for not just you, but everyone else. It's great if I can make a lot of money and have a nice house, but if the guy next door to me can't, that affects my quality of life. And I think that's something that we have to recognize.
And a strong Jewish ideal as well. We will continue to meet with Vice Mayor Paul Cunningham of Tucson and talk about some of his personal challenges and growth when we come back here on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We welcome Pam and David of Freedom Smoke. So your product, a smokeless way to get off of tobacco, people don't really understand exactly what's wrong with cigarettes, or they think it's the same thing that's wrong with your product. Can you explain the difference?
That's true, Rabbi Kohan. Part of it is the cigarettes themselves, the FDA made them release the ingredients. There's over 3,000 ingredients in cigarettes. There's four ingredients in electronic cigarettes. Propylene glycol, vegetable glycerine, flavorings from Flavor Art in Italy, who is who we use, and nicotine itself. Our nicotine is USP hospital grade. It's the finest that you can purchase. Nicotine in and of itself is not harmful to the human body. That's why we have so many doctors referring patients that they just cannot get to quit smoking cigarettes. They send them to us for a much healthier alternative.
And where do people go and how do they find your stuff?
They can go to one of our three stores here in Tucson. We've got one at Orange Grove and River, one at Broadway and Swan, and one at 12th and Valencia. or they can go online to freedomsmokeusa.com.
Thanks very much, and we'll talk next week.
Thank Always you. A pleasure.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or akvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's twojewishradio18@gmail. Or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can stream all past and present shows through the website or download us from there at the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. And now, it's time for a recurring, inscrutably irregular feature of Too Jewish, Haikus for Jews, the Wisdom of Zen Judaism. This time, a Passover haiku. Lacking fins or tail, the gefilte fish swims with great difficulty. That was The Eternal Wisdom from Zen Judaism for the coming festival of Passover, a haiku for Jews. We welcome our Mivina in Israel, Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
Well, it's springtime, and it's getting to be the season for Pesach. It's not quite there. We've got a couple of weeks left to go, but the preparations for Passover start early. That's true in America, but Alachat kama v'chama, we say in Talmud. How much more so is that true in Israel? Tell us a little bit about what it's like to begin to prepare for Pesach in the Holy Land.
Yeah, I don't know if you know, but teachers in Israel have a very long vacation.
No.
I can understand why, but I don't know if the teachers, more than everyone else, need more time to clean their houses.
You wouldn't think so.
But almost 2.5 weeks before Pesach.
So there's a huge
vacation. 2 weeks, I would say, and another week for Chol HaMoed.
Uh-huh.
So it's almost, you know, half.
Almost a month, close to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it starts with a lot of kids out there, you know, in the streets and all kind. And of course, along with the kids in the street, you will smell the
cooking.
No,
not the, oh, the cleaning.
Nahon, that is a bleach. You will
the
smell
bleach.
The bleach all over Israel, like kind of a cloud of bleach. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I lived in Jerusalem, and the only way to get the mold off of the walls after the rains of the winter is bleach. That's what they use. So it's spring, the winter's over, it's starting to dry out a little bit, and that's when you start to clean.
And you know, I have memories from the early ages, my early age, when my Saba and Safta,
your grandma and grandpa,
and grandpa used to take out all the filling of the pillows, even.
Wow.
Yeah.
Unstuff the pillows to clean to get rid of chametz.
Yeah. I'm so sorry that I didn't get a chance to ask them why. For God's sake, who is the one who hide bread
inside their pillow?
But I don't know, maybe it's something from Morocco that I don't know, but it's really my early, like my memories.
Your earliest
from
memory
my,
is them unpacking
not,
the pillows.
Thank you for asking. We're not doing that
thank
anymore.
thank god. There are some things where moving forward is a good thing.
Yes.
Not all traditions
are
so great.
Now we're buying new pillows if we want.
If you want to unpack your pillows,
actually,
go for it.
You know, it's a huge time of the year for shopping. Mm-hmm. It's not like here, it's the Christmas time. So
here it's Pesach.
It's Pesach. People buy dishes and furniture and, you know, it's sometimes houses.
So you do the spring cleaning and you decide, I need a new rug, I need a new couch. That's the time to
and
do
it. And it's a huge timing also for Chesed, for Gmachim. People give away
donations.
Like clothing and furniture and, you know, it's
so
really,
we would call it goodwill, and in Israel
goodwill.
It's the same basic concept.
So Pesach, it's the major time of the year, even more in the high holidays, of giving out, because people renewing their homes.
They're cleaning their home. It's a home-based festival. Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are much less
so. And you will find a lot of all kind of second-hand fairs for books, for toys, for whatever.
Furniture, for clothing, for everything. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great time of year, and a great time of year to clean out and to renew. It's a good message, not only in Israel, but probably here too.
Yes.
Thanks, Ashrat. We'll talk next week.
Toda Rabbi.
Our Jewish poetry slam this morning is from Marge Piercy, part of her Passover poetry cycle that we've been using. It's called Karpas, dedicated to the green vegetable of the Passover Seder, often parsley.
Pesach is coming up Friday night, April 3rd. I am one of those weird people who eat the parsley garnish off restaurant dinners, not only mine, but yours and his. I will nibble them all. I like the sharp, almost gritty bite of the leaves. Its formidable green, its prickly, rank scent, its persistence under snow. Dip the leaves, curly as hairs, into the tears in the bowl, remembering old pain and the strength to endure and grow on. Give the taste of spring, not that sentimental spring of bunnies and florist bouquets, but the real season of hungry deer and geese honking tiny in the gray sky, of dirt thawing with the bones of winter exposed to the sun, old deaths and the cost of survival, the miracle of days growing longer like hair. That was Marge Piercy's poem for the Seder, Karpas, the green vegetable. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We've been exploring the sources of anti-Semitism, looked at the Greek world, the Roman world. I guess we've covered Greco-Roman anti-Semitism. The first, second, third century, things change in an interesting and dramatic way with the introduction of Christianity. Let's explore how that early ancient experience affected Judaism.
Well, first of all, as I'm sure most of your listeners know, Jesus and Paul and all the early disciples were themselves Jewish. And early Christianity was seen by others and considered itself as a Jewish sect. And it was one of many Jewish sects at the time. There were Essenes and Zealots and
Pharisees and Sadducees, right, and so on.
You know, half a dozen are well known even today, but there were probably more. And they were all sort of competing for survival. So they tended to badmouth each other, not unlike certain groups of Jews today.
No, how could that ever happen?
And there was a huge range of opinion within Christian thought in the early church, certainly in the centuries you just mentioned, the first, second, third, even fourth century CE or AD, as some people prefer, on several key questions, which eventually needed to be resolved in order to establish Christianity as a solid religion with a sense of at least the lowest common denominator of what it means to be Christian. So one of the questions was, is Jesus divine or is he human? Another way of putting that is, what's the relationship among the elements of the Holy Trinity? And there were significant differences that led to actually military conflict among early Christians on these exact questions. Is Jesus divine? If so, how? In what sense? What's the relationship between the notion of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost? Some people claim that if Jesus were indeed the Son, then he was somehow less than God or younger or inferior. And so to talk about three equal elements of the Trinity was foolish. And these doctrinal differences at a time when the religion was not yet established and was very insecure and was seeking converts actively, resulted in a lot of violence, usually not directed against Jews, but between various sects or among various sects of Christians. What began to happen was that the Romans, who prized above all law and order, predictability, peacefulness, et cetera, saw Christians as a destabilizing group because of all these fights and all this infighting. And the Romans started persecuting Christians in their own right in the second and third centuries CE, not as a Jewish sect, but because they were stirring up trouble.
You know, all this infighting, it makes them sound too Jewish.
Right, right.
So we will continue to explore this question and how the Roman persecution of the Christians turns into something kind of virulently anti-Semitic when we return next week. Thanks, Tom.
I look forward to it.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Gero Psychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Gero Psych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Gero Psychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
Hi, I'm Ben. Attention Arizona taxpayers, you can help provide a Jewish education to families at no cost to you by redirecting your Arizona state tax dollars to JETCO, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization. You can help make Jewish education affordable.
Here's how it works. Arizona lets taxpayers receive a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to JETCO. This lets JETCO give scholarships to kids who attend private schools like Congregation Anshe Israel's Kindergarten and Tucson Hebrew Academy, serving students from K through 8. Tax credits are different from a tax deduction or donation. When you give to JETCO, you get 100% tax credit. That means your Arizona state income taxes are reduced by the exact amount you've given. Supporters of JETCO can give up to $1,053 for a single filer or $2,106 for a married couple filing jointly and get that whole amount back from state income tax.
Give JETCO a call at 647-8442. That's 647-8442. Or you can go to JETCO.org.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. A spaceship lands in the middle of Texas. As the Martians start filing out, a big Texan walks up to the one who looks like the leader. He asks the Martian, "Y'all got them green eyes?" The Martian answers back in a machine-like drone, "Yes, we all have green eyes." The Texan again inquires, "And y'all got those antennae on your heads?" "Yes, we all have antennae on our heads." The Texan remains curious. He looks more of the Martians, and he again asks the leader, "Y'all got them long black coats?" To which the Martian answers, "No, only the Hasidim." Yes, that was the old Jewish joke of the week. That one's out of this world. A special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week's Torah portion is the second in the book of Leviticus, Tzav, the section that establishes the rules for the various sacrifices offered in the tabernacle in the wilderness, the Mishkan, and later in the temple in Jerusalem. There are many different types of sacrifices commanded, burnt offerings, guilt offerings, sin offerings, and so on. But one group of sacrificial offerings stands out, the offerings of peace, the Zevach Shlamim. And among this high category of offerings, one in particular rises even higher, the Zevach HaTodah, the Thanksgiving offering. The rabbis thought so highly of thanksgiving to God that they're quoted in the Talmud saying that when the Messiah comes, all sacrifices will have completed their mission. All will be discontinued with one exception, the thanksgiving offering. That sacrifice will last forever. Even in a perfect world, we must remember to give thanks, to be grateful for what we have. As we approach the holiday of Pesach, we do well to remember that gratitude for what we have is both the most essential of all religious motivations and the hardest to keep in mind. If we can each take a moment to write or email or phone our thanks today to someone who is important in our lives, we will begin to renew this great commitment of our Torah portion.
we have so much for which to be grateful. And if we can also each take a moment today to thank God for what we have, and to be more conscious of those who have less, we will begin to make this a better world. For thanksgiving should not lead us to complacency, but to humility and gratitude. This Shabbat is also the great Sabbath that precedes Passover, called Shabbat HaGadol. That name is taken from its famous Haftarah, which proclaims the coming of the great and awesome day of God, in which the prophet Elijah will come and turn the hearts of children to their parents and the hearts of parents to their children. As the father of three teenagers, I can promise you that there are days when it seems like it will take God's direct intervention to make that prophecy occur. But there are also days when it seems as though Elijah's arrival is imminent, and then things go well, for which we as parents must also remember to be very grateful, whether or not the Messiah is actually coming just yet. Well, not the Messiah, but when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish, our guest, Tucson City Councilman Paul Cunningham, will share a candid story about service, faith, and redemption. Don't miss it when we return in a few moments here on Too Jewish.
If you like fun and games, you'll love this. And this. And even this. Casino del Sol Resort offers more fun under the sun with the newest slots, the best entertainment, and world-class golf. If you want fun, hit the... at Casino del Sol Resort in Tucson. Take I-10 East to I-19 exit Valencia West or visit CasinoDelSolResort.com. Where they're out there having fun in that warm Arizona sun. Enterprise of the Pasquagaki Tribe.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary from our guest, Rabbi Sandy Seltzer.
Contrary to the predictions of most political analysts, Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu appears to have won an unexpected victory in last week's elections in that country. What remains unclear, given the closeness of the race, is whether he will be able to form a government, and if he does, who will serve in it. The answer to that question may take days or even weeks to resolve, and with its resolution, the future of peace talks between Israel and the Palestinians. After 7 years in the job, former Prime Minister Tony Blair of Great Britain is stepping down as the official envoy of what is known as the Middle East Quartet, the United States, the United Nations, Russia, and the European Union, whose function has been to mediate the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. He leaves in the wake of much debate over Mr. Blair's accomplishments during his stay in that office, let alone that of the so-called quartet. With French dignitaries in attendance, including the Minister of the Interior, the Paris kosher supermarket, where four Jews were killed in January, reopened after extensive renovations. During the ceremonies, the store manager said, "We were stunned by the attack, but there was never any question that we would reopen. Once again, we reaffirm that life will always be stronger than barbarism." While it is still too soon to judge its success, a cinema in Jerusalem, in a novel effort to attract more Israeli Arabs to the movies, is now for the first time featuring subtitles in Arabic for all of its films, since only a small minority of Arabs speak either Hebrew or English. The project, called Cinema for Everyone, has been financed by a grant from Hollywood producer Steven Spielberg's Righteous Persons Foundation. A Brazilian magazine is alleging that Iran helped finance the 2007 political campaign of the current president of Argentina, Cristina Kirchner, in return for her government's protection of those Iranians responsible for the 1984 bombing of the Jewish Community Center in Buenos Aires, which killed 85 persons and wounded 300. These revelations appear to support the accusations made by the late Argentinian prosecutor Alberto Nisman, who was found dead in his apartment just before he was about to file charges against the president for her alleged collaboration with Iran related to the bombing. As of today, the cause of Nisman's death has yet to be clarified, nor have those guilty of the bombing ever been brought to trial. Turning to a heartwarming story, Zoe Butchkin is a 14-year-old girl living in Richfield, Connecticut. When her father told her that he had been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, Zoe decided to post a video of herself on social media, dancing to the song made famous by Taylor Swift, Shake It Off. Her goal was to raise $100,000. Already $50,000 has been collected to be sent to the Michael J. Fox Foundation for Parkinson's research. In recognition of her efforts, Zoe has just been named the chair of Marathon Madness, a philanthropic initiative that brings Jewish teenagers from around the world together to support causes they care about. And that's the two Jewish news of Jews around the world.
We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Paul Cunningham is a native Tucsonan, longtime community activist with close to 20 years of professional and volunteer public service. He has been on the city council and is vice mayor of Tucson right now. He started his career at the YMCA, actually, not the JCC, in Ward 2 in Tucson. He's a 12-year veteran of the Pima County Juvenile Probation Department, served in the Army Reserve and the National Guard as well. Paul, I want to ask you an interesting question. Having come into your position and serving as a city councilman, coming from a family legacy of public service in Arizona, judge, state senator, do you feel a special level of responsibility, or are you just like anybody else in this kind of position?
I'd be lying if I said that I didn't feel that special level of responsibility, but I'm no better than anyone else. So the bottom line is that
doesn't matter what your grandparents and parents did. You got to do it yourself.
You got to do it yourself. You got to take ownership of it. And you know, if you're not careful, that special level of responsibility can turn into a false sense of entitlement. And I don't ever want to be that guy. I punch a clock every morning as a teacher, and the city council is something that I do as well. And I think I do it pretty well. We've had some success, but again. I think you lose sight of what you're doing there if you're impressed by the fact that you're on the city council.
So I'm going to ask you, you know, a challenging question. You've had some difficulty in your personal life and have overcome it. Talk a little bit about that, if you would.
Well, it started about 18 or 19. I drank. I don't know if I drank super heavily all the time, but I drank enough where I wasn't one of the guys who could put it down. So I drink a little too much and slow down. Every single time I either had a crisis or had something messed up or just had some life-involving event, I'd slow down for a while. But it would only last a while. And I think after a while, I just started drinking a little too much and made some poor choices. And, you know, you don't want to dwell on all those things. I can say that I went through the same program that a lot of people go through when they face this. It's the most normal one. It's also one that the philosophy of it says you don't publicize it and talk about it. So
I understand.
I went through my program, and what I learned was that one is you got to be really honest with yourself, and two is you got to find your faith. Your higher power and your roots on what build the foundation for your faith are two things that you have to have if you want to beat if you want to beat the challenges of addiction or alcoholism or anything else. You have to face them face on, and having that faith behind you doesn't make it so scary. And so that was kind of the impetus of that, and so far, knock on wood, things are going really well, and I gotta say that I'm grateful and fortunate, and I'm just gonna keep doing it one day at a time.
One day at a time, of course, is not just a mantra, but really a commitment. Most Jews believe that other Jews don't have addiction problems. There's sort of a classic idea that, we don't have that. That's not really true, of course. It's just as common nowadays among Jews as it is among the general population. When you say turning to faith, because faith undergirds the program you're talking about, the 12-step program, all 12-step programs really begin with some statement of faith. Did you find that your Jewish background prepared you for it, or was there a gap, really? I think there can be, in which there wasn't such a deep commitment to faith. It was more cultural or more communal.
Well, I'm not a rabbi, and I don't want to give people theological advice, especially if they're given these challenges. I think that everybody has their own path. But for me, and just speaking for me, I'd say that connecting true faith and with your Jewish foundation was probably one of the most powerful experiences of my life. And so it made it, you have all these ideals already built in, and some of them get undone, but they kind of mesh together really well in the end. Some people say this is my higher power. Some people turn to Jesus. Some people turn to Hashem. But whatever you do, the bottom line is that you're taking faith in something. You're saying there's something else and it counts. And you're basically taking the same leap. I think the way I tied it into was you're taking the same leap of faith that Abraham does.
Mm-hmm.
Abraham, he goes and smashes all those idols. And he says, well, all these idols woke up and they smashed each other. And they're like, well, no, they didn't. His mother comes and she says, no, they didn't. Well, the bottom line is that Abraham had already taken that leap of faith. There was something else. There was something bigger than everything else. For me, I totally related to that. It totally goes back to David Lyons, who's, I think, a rabbi now.
He is indeed.
David Lyons in Sunday school in, 1984. That's what I remember. And so it was really easy.
I'm going to call him and tell him you said that. That's great. And thank you for your honesty about it. But it is sort of that challenge of a leap of faith. I wanna go back to an incident we were talking about before we started the interview today, which really demonstrated the power of communal work too. You talked about working with some teens at Hebrew High years ago on a Panim El Panim program. Tell us a little bit about what that was about and how that happened.
So right after I got out of the Army, reserves, I still wanted to do. I planned to, with my spare time, start a business or work something extra. I always felt I could do a little extra. So I discharged from the Army Reserves, and it's got to be September 1st of 2001.
Mm-hmm.
10 days later, the towers come down.
Yeah.
So I tell my mother, I say, Mother, I'm going back to the Army Reserves, and I'm going to do this. And at the time, I was working for juvenile probation. I was going out at night, knocking on doors, doing the probation job, which is a public safety job. I mean, you're taking some risks there. Not very many, but there have been some incidents where probation officers have been in situations where there's danger presented. In fact, it happens all the time, actually. Anyway, I told my mother that I was going back in the Army National Guard, and my mother says, forget that. You're not going. I don't want you to die in Iraq. And I said, Mother, I should go. It's important. And I went back to the Army, and the amount of paperwork and just there were some issues that I may have to go to training again. It just didn't really pan out. And so I decided that my extra time could be spent, one, coaching youth sports, and the other one would be teaching at Hebrew High to keep some Jewish. My mom was teaching cooking at Hebrew High, so I was teaching the Jews and politics class. So I'm teaching this Panim course. And so this course, you go, you teach some civics, you teach some policy. Sharon Glassman and Lisa Ginsburg were running the program over
right,
there.
Sharon Glassman, Lisa Ginsburg.
And so I ended up taking the kids to D.C., and I went a couple times. In the third or fourth year, I had this group of kids that were just fantastic.
So I should explain this. Panim El Panim program is run with the Religious Action Center in Washington, D.C. It's a reform movement program, although kids from all kinds of backgrounds participate, and it's a chance to meet legislators and lobby them and see what the issues are and also, well, get excited.
Well, but the other piece is Rabbi Sid Schwartz runs it, and he was one of the people who planned the March for Soviet Jewry in 1986, I think. It was the biggest march on Washington since Dr. King had marched.
Right.
And so it's a really big deal when he comes in and talks to the kids. And he gives them the theme, go for it, dream it, do it, go for it. So this group of children come back, and they weren't really children. They were all 15, 16, 17 years old. One of them was my cousin. And they said, well, we wanted to have a concert for teen homelessness. That's what they decided.
You know, it's inspiring, though, to think, here's just a group of Jewish teens, not huge, you know, like 9, 10 kids, really. And they pulled off this event, working with you to create this change, you know, and something that really could materially help people who are homeless.
Well, it was the kids.
Yeah.
It was the right mix of kids. It was, you had the strong leader type, you had the one, you had the dreamer,
right.
You had the real organized, hardworking kid, you had there were two kids that were a little less, they weren't as popular, but they were really, really good students and other things, and they were able to be a part of it because of that, and it gave them some confidence and things like that. I think all the way around, it all fit together really well, and you know, they did it. They had their stuff together. They pulled it off. It was an amazing experience, one of the more profound ones I've had in my life.
I want to thank Congressman Paul, the congressman. I just made you a congressman. Hey.
Well, oh, by the way, for clarification, the rabbi introduced me as vice mayor, and I think by the time this
airs, you won't be vice mayor anymore. Yeah. So. It's a rotating office. I should be honest about that. Former vice mayor and city councilman Paul Cunningham for a great visit, a very candid one, and a really powerful one. We'll have to do it again. Paul, thanks so much.
Rabbi, thanks for having me, and for everyone out there. Just keep on going. Tucson's having a great decade, and we're going to continue.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 a.m. Our guest will be Ruchama King-Fuhrman, the author of one of my favorite books in recent years, the novel In the Courtyard of the Kabbalists. Our playout this morning in preparation for Passover comes from the Yale a cappella group Magevet, Eliyahu Hanavi, Elijah the Prophet. It's for the Seder coming up in less than 2 weeks. My friends, may you be blessed with a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.